Okay, thank you very much. I thought that probably it would be better if I give the first half of the talk in the blackboard, because this community is very diverse. So I will concentrate on the background of conductivity in disorder systems, which I will, as I will show in the second half, is described by the results of the new community has provided and are really relatively unknown in the disorder electronic systems community. It's my first talk in the blackboard, I think, so I hope it's not too bad. Okay, the idea is to give you an introduction to conductivity in disorder systems, which under soil localization, then the Hamiltonian that we want to solve is this. Okay, here, this is the number operator on site I. In principle, these are sites. This is the hopping or transfer energy between sites. This is assumed constant, and we take it as our unit of energy. And these site energies are random. They are in a certain interval. So, and then the big question is, the relevant parameter here is the disorder over the transfer of kinetic energy. And the big question is, as a function of W, and depending on dimensionality, the eigenfunctions of this system are localized or extended. If they are localized, then we have an insulator. If they are extended, we have a metal, maybe very bad metal, but a metal. And this problem, which seems easy, it has been proved to be terribly hard. Even with this is without interactions. So even without interaction, this problem is very hard. And we have been working on that for years. So to start, in one dimension is easy. So in one dimension, everything has been worked out analytically. And then the most important magnitude in this problem is the conductivity. So, and then the conductivity, I will explain it later in the details before presenting the result, but just a rough idea, the conductivity, to define it properly and to take into account finite size effect carefully as we need here, then what we assume is that we have some system.
Okay, so it's not clear enough. What is Ni? You have to explain to mathematicians.
Okay, Ni is the number operator. That means that this is, okay, yes, yeah.
It's just a quadratic.
So this is an operator that is not relevant for the rest, but
really?
So.
C is a creation.
Exactly. C destroy an electron, and C plus create an electron.
And J and I are nearest neighbor?
It doesn't have to be, but the easiest thing is to assume that they are nearest neighbor. So these things tells me that if I have an electron side I, the system have energy epsilon I, and this tells me that if an electron on one side can jump to the other side. This is classical, and this is quantum, and the whole thing is, the mixture of the two terms is what is difficult to solve today. To analyze this problem is then quite difficult. You can think this as a matrix. So this is just a matrix. This is just a matrix where you have here epsilon 1, epsilon 2, and here the T in one dimension. So in one dimension is just this matrix. So we have to diagonalize this matrix, but in two dimensions this is banded, and in three is more, there are more bands. So this is the problem to solve. These are constant, but these things are at random. Okay, then this is our system, and we attach two leads. In the leads, there is no disorder, So here the solution are plane waves. If this is finite size, then it will be a combination of plane waves. But basically, you have here plane waves, so that you send a wave here, and it's partly reflected and partly transmitted. And then the conductivity is proportional to the transmission coefficient. And that's the.
In terms of matrices, what is happening there?
In terms of matrices. Oh, okay. This is the Hamiltonian of the system itself. Here, I will have to add the Hamiltonian of the leads, and which will have no disorder. So it's like if here you put a self energy, but I don't want
maybe
to.
Maybe you should just talk about localization of the wave functions first before you think about something as complicated as.
Okay, just take that. What we want really is the probability of going from here to here. Okay? And then we can go through all the paths. But I will give the details of that later on. Just believe me that. Now it's only needed just a rough idea. That the conductivity is the transmission from one lead to the other. You just propagate.
It's very. Probability.
Sorry.
Square.
Conductivity, the conductance, in fact, is proportional to the transmission square between the two leads, to the probability of transmission probability between the two leads. It really doesn't matter for the rest, no. Okay, then in 1D, it was shown analytically from the very beginning that all states are localized. Even with any finite amount of disorder, all the states are localized. And then the conductivity is proportional to the proportionality constant is just the quantum of conductance that is. All right, so we just take transmission. So this is the proportionality here, also here. So the conductivity is of this form. L is the size of the system. This is in 1D. I repeat, and psi is the localization length. And that's what is more or less difficult to get. In 1D, for example, with this model that I put here, this is roughly speaking 100. Over W square. So the important thing is the distribution of the conductance is log normal, so that you see, if I take this is the average. So really, what I mean by that is that the average of the conductance is this. Then, as it's log normal. Then the only other moment that appear here is the variance. And then the variance is the variance of the logarithm of the distribution. And then it was proven analytically, as I said again, that the variance satisfies this. Then what you see is that L over psi is the only relevant parameter in the problem.
What is L? It's
like L is the system size, and psi is the localization length. So I mean, the states are like that, are localized, and then they decay with this function, no?
One dimension?
Well, in all dimensions, but for the moment I'm talking about one dimension. This is true for all dimensions in the localized regime, but this is just for one dimension.
In the Hamiltonian, am I supposed to think of the sum as being like from 1 to L or something, or this is totally different?
Yes, here we assume that we go from 1 to L. Exactly.
Okay, so that's actually the space of the system.
Yes. Okay. So when we do that, wave functions decay. They are center of different size, and then the conductivity is like that because it's basically this square for this here the factor of 2. So the connectivity, there is only this parameter, L over psi, determines all not only the average conductance, of course, but the whole distribution, because it's the only other moment different from zero is the variance, and then the variance satisfies that, then you see only depend on L over psi. So at the end, what we have, as I say, this is proved analytically in 1D, is that in 1D, the whole distribution of the conductance depends only on one parameter. And this is what is called single parameter scaling. And that's what it was assumed, that has been a very, very successful theory, that the whole distribution of the conductivity only depends on one parameter. Then, the most important paper in localization was the scaling theory. And then what the scaling theory says is that not only for 1D, that is clearly satisfied, but in all dimensions, what we have is the following, is that the parameter beta, something like that, this parameter, that is how much change the conductance as a function of size, only depends on the conductance itself. So that this is just a function, a universal function of the conductor. Oh, yes, yes?
But this would force beta to be a random object, is that right?
Sorry?
So beta is a random object?
Yes, yes, yes. Beta is a random object, but, okay. In the way this was formulated, this means average of the logarithm of the conductors, in principle. But it's also for the whole distribution. But we'll see this. For the moment, I mean, in the original paper, it was the average of the conductors. What this means is the following: is if I have two pieces of a system with a given disorder, so that they have a given conductance, then the conductance of the combined system is the same as if now I have, for example, a much weaker disorder, but a larger system. So if this is conductance G, this is conductance G, but changing the length and the disorder and everything. So whenever I mix two systems with the same conductance, the overall conductance of the combined system is the same. So I mix here. These two systems can be very different. I can change the parameter, the length here, the length of the disorder or the Fermi energy, I can change a few things. The thing is that if the G is the same here, when I double the system, the G is again the same here. That's what this is saying, is that the only crucial quantity is the conductance. The conductor then scale universally with system size. This, of course, is verified in 1D. Then what they did is to plot this function.
So only in the localized machine, or?
No, this is true everywhere. This is true everywhere. So we plot here beta as a function of log G.
So this average log G.
Sorry?
You're neglecting the fluctuation of log G. Right?
Exactly. Now, for the moment, this is just the average. For the moment, this is just the average. This is for the average. So we plot that, then in 1D, it does this thing, and where this is minus 1. So it goes, then these limits are easy to check, for example, in the localized limit. So if we have that, then you take the derivative, then you end up that beta is equal to log G, or proportional to log G. Yes, okay, then put that. Take the log and take the derivative with respect to the log of L, and then you obtain that in the localized regime, this is a straight line with a slope 1. Here, this is the limit of extended limit, and then in the extended limit, this is a metal, and then in a metal, the conductance is a conductivity times L to D minus 2. So this is Ohm's law. Ohm's law, this is just a question of dimensionality. So this is a, is not the sigma there, but it's, people use the same symbol. So this is just a material property. So if it's copper conduct more or less, this is how much the material conduct, but then and this is the conductivity. This depends on the material. To go from the conductivity to the conductance, this is just a geometrical problem. Then what we have to do is take this geometry factor into account. So if you calculate beta, then what you see is that depending in the metallic regime, for one dimension, this is equal to minus one. For two dimensions, this is zero. And for three dimensions, this is one. So this is 1D, 2D, and 3D. Then if the disorder is very strong, it's easy to prove that they, you always end up in a, so this is a strong disorder, and this is a weak disorder. In the strong disorder limit, you have for 2D and for 3D the same behavior. So you have here, if the disorder is very strong, we have exponentially localized wave function, so the conductance is always like that. And here, you end up here. So what they assume, by perturbation theory, you also know that this, in perturbation theory, you can calculate that these functions are like that, that they are negative. So just joining these two things, that's what the scaling theory is saying, is that the conductivity behaves like that. That means that in 1D, all states are localized. If the thing is, when you increase system size, you go toward there. So here, this is the flow, the renormalization flow, while here, you go like that. So what this is telling us is that in 1D, all states are localized. In 2D, all states are localized. While in 3D, there is a transition. So for a given amount of disorder, states are localized. For less disorder, states are extended. If I increase the system size, then if I started with a disorder somewhere here, I get more and more localized the system, while in here is the other way around. This is in the absence of interactions. Interactions may change this, and probably what they do is that they bring these lines somewhere here so that you have localized and delocalized phases in all dimensions. But without interactions, this is well founded by now, and has been checked numerically, experimentally, many. So this is the theory. The theory, in principle, was formulated for the average conductance. But then the assumption that has worked in most cases is that the same theory applied to the whole distribution of the conductance. That is, the whole distribution of the conductance should depend on just one parameter. This strong assumption of scaling and the fact that here all the curves are the same induce people to think that the distribution of the conductance in the localized phase is always the same independent of dimensionality. So the standard belief was that independently of the geometry, independently of the leads, and so on. So for decades, since this was done in the 70s, at the end of the 70s, so I think that the general thought, most people thought that the distribution of the conductance in the localized regime was log normal. One thing is that the numerics, so why the numerics, this is not right. In 2D, that's what I'm going to show you, is that in 2D it's Tracy Widow, the distribution of the conductance is Tracy Widow. Then why numerics didn't show that? Okay, because at the time computers were not very powerful. So to check these things, what they did were systems that they were basically one-dimensional. So if 2D systems were very long stripes, and they changed this slightly, and see, they study one-dimensional systems or pseudo one-dimensional systems that they and they scale the properties with this with the width. And then they miss completely what is the distribution. So the things that has been most studied, this is the regime of dirty metals, what they call dirty metals, so stay there. Even if here they are, strictly speaking, they are localized, we are very close to here, for a given finite size, they see extended, so this is called a dirty metal. This has been very, very much studied. This is the metal Anderson metal insulator transition. This has been also studied a lot. The thing, this regime hasn't had so much attention. Among other things, because you have a very long system, you cannot measure the conductivity decay exponentially, so you cannot measure it. The only thing that you can measure is when this is at finite temperature. Then at finite temperature, in this regime, conductivity is by Hopping. Hopping means that you have a localized state here, for example, another here. Then a phonon, that is a vibration of the lattice, move from here to here. So conductivity here produces scattering of carriers, of free carriers. Here it plays the opposite role. Here what it does is that able conduction by hopping between localized states. And that's what it called hopping conduction.
Is the middle line where beta is that supposed to be log g equals zero?
What?
The axis? Where is zero? Where is log z?
I don't think it's relevant where is zero here.
So when you're moderate, you know, when log g is changing, that corresponds to changing the system size and the
exactly.
The width. But log g is always negative.
Log g.
But you wrote log g is minus 2L over.
Oh, this is here in the localized regime. Here doesn't have to be negative in the extended regime. But here in the localized regime is negative. So in these units, in 1D is always in these units the G is always smaller than 1. But here it can be larger than 1. When you extend it, there are many channels that are conducting, and conductivity can be larger than 1. But in the localized regime, it's always exponentially small.
So the way that you control the value of log G is by tuning the system size and the width of the...
Exactly. If I take a given width, then I start here. Then if I keep increasing system size, I keep going there because psi is constant and L is increasing. So that's how I control the flow here, okay? So the thing is, we were studying this type of conductivity in insulating systems. So in the regime here. In this case, you have to calculate these type of things, how one state mix with the other and things like that. So we really, to improve present theories at the time, we really wanted to have the whole distribution of the conductance of the states in this regime. So we have relatively powerful computers, so what we did is that we start having square samples, really square samples, and calculate the conductivity, even attaching wide leads, so leads of the same size of the sample. So this is perfect metal, and here the disordered sample, or attaching narrow leads, so just one dimensional lead here. So we start calculating, and then we really check that this overall assumption was absolutely wrong. And then the thing that we found more easily is that this, you see, this goes as L. If it's Gaussian, well, it's here, no? This, for the Gaussian thing, goes as L. While what we found is that this goes as L to the 2/3. So that was the first thing we found. The other thing we found...
No, it's two-dimensional, especially...
In two dimensions, yeah, exactly. From now on, all we have done is in 2D. So in 2D, we clearly found that this is the case. We found that the conductance have corrections that goes like L to the 1/3. And we also found that the skewness was different from zero and didn't tend to zero. So it was completely different. Then we were familiar with the work of Meran and Medina on a model called NSS, and we were familiar with that for a completely different reason in the treatment of magnetic field effects. So we were, and with that, he already, for this model, he already had established, or they have already established, the analogy of directed polymers with these models. So that's where we start to look in all of your literature to see that everything was fitting with your results that you already got for directed polymers, and particularly the Tracy Whedon distribution. And then the final result, I just put the, after some random walk in your literature, we end up what I think is the final result for the conductivity, the quantum conductivity in 2D system, that is that. Okay, I think this result is very familiar to you, but in the disorder system community was like heresy, but I think that now everybody's convinced that this is really the true. So, okay, what you see is that what you don't use, and we do, is that we write it like that, so that the localization length enters. So, again, this is single parameter scaling. There is only one parameter. Okay, this is a Tracy Whedon distribution. This is a Tracy Whedon distribution that depends on the geometry, on the leads, and so on. And that's what I will show you now with the how fits, how nicely fit to many geometry that we have already studied. So this is, once we fix the geometry, that's it. This is just a constant, a universal constant of the order of one. And then the only parameter of the problem is log C. So we recover single parameter scaling, but we have something that is far more interesting than the log normal distribution. One thing is that this result is very robust. We have always found this. Single parameter scaling occurs if these things does not, is just a constant and does not depend on the details. This sometimes is violated, but the same as in 1D with the log normal thing. So single parameter scaling for the whole distribution function sometimes is violated. But it's not the, for example, if you have, if these are the energies, the random energy, if these are the energies of the problem, then here, this is the density of a state. This is energy. So this is the random, more or less, this is W. But when you solve this, there are tails here that are called Lipschitz tails, and are states that are rare states that are there. Then here, we have two length scale. One, the localization length, but the other, the separation, the stair. These, the states here are very far apart, so there is another length related to the density of a state. So we really have two lengths in the problem. Then, in this case, this depends on this. But otherwise, if you are here, because this, we can put the leads can be at different energies, so we can change the energy, what is called the Fermi level, so that here we can change the disorder, the Fermi level, the type of lattice, many things, and still is alpha, for most of the cases, alpha is constant, and there is single parameter scaling for the whole distribution. And sometimes in some rare exceptions, this depends on some parameter. And it's understood why it does so.
But you get this Tracy Whedon, it's a GUE or GUE, which one you get?
I will show you in a minute, okay. All of them.
But this is asymptotic as L goes to infinity, or?
Yes, that's right, that's right.
But not as W goes to infinity?
Either. You have to take either limit. You have to take either limit, yeah. Okay, so let me show you the numerical results.
So you could have L equals 1, but W goes to... You could have L equals 1 and W goes to infinity, or...
L? Oh, No.
Maybe both.
No, I don't know. We never did that.
Maybe both.
Is it working?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, this you know. Okay, this is just, okay, this is what I already draw the, so first, we just take square samples as large as possible and put narrow leads and wide leads. And then these are the results. So these are the Tracy Whedon distributions. The blue is for narrow leads, and this is for wide leads. And these are the F2 and the F0. I think you are all familiar. I didn't bother to write what are these Tracy Whedon distributions.
F0 is the bigrinds? I mean, what?
Yeah,
bigrinds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you explain the narrow wide leads again?
Can you explain the leads?
The leads are these things. The narrow is that in the middle of the sample there is. So basically, this is irrelevant. That's it. So basically, you just obtain the green function going from here to here.
So that's the F2 case.
Sorry?
That's the F2 case.
Yeah. That's the F2 case. This is F2 and this is F0.
What do you
calculate
there?
Okay. Yeah, sorry. I should have told you what I calculate. A second. Yeah, sorry. I let me.
No, on the wide thing.
So let me.
The
right thing is that this alternate deflexing is just a plain wave equation. I mean,
it's
just zero potential. It's zero potential out there. It's just a wave which is transmitted. It's a wave which is transmitted across. Yes, I forgot to tell you what I calculate. Exactly. I promise I will say. So, G in these units is basically the green function squared. And then the green function is this between, let's say, side A and B, so that here this is A and this is B, so I want to calculate the green function between these two points. And this is just this. The sum over all paths, Okay, this is what I'm calculating. So here, I consider all the paths between two points. I consider all possible paths. Path can do things like that. So in each path, I sum all these factors. These are the random energies, and this is an energy that I can choose. So but here, for example, E is equal to 0, so we are in the middle of the band. So this is basically, the results are basically independent of E, so you can take as E as 0 for this case. Then
it's just a resolvent expansion for
this. Sorry?
It's just a resolvent expansion for this inverse operator.
Yes, yeah. I mean, we don't do it like that. I mean, we do it in a numerically much more efficient thing, of course, but that's what we, that's the object we are calculating.
Yeah.
You make sure that your E does not coincide with any of the epsilon I?
With?
That denominator is never zero.
If we calculate it like that, we will have to check that. But we don't calculate it like that, and there is, when you do it, I mean, you want, like, when there are leads, there are never infinities. The leaf produce an imaginary component in the calculation of the Green function that avoid any infinite there, any infinity. So really, so this is very much related to the partition function in directed polymers. That is just this, no? So in directed polymers, again, you take the same two points, and Hi are the height, or I don't know how you call the, or the energy of each side. So if here, for example, you just take directed path, that is the problem that was studied by Meran, and that we use usually in the second part of the result, we will use this model very thoroughly. Then if we take directed path, you see that these two things look formally very similar. So the mapping between these two things is that this quantity for polymers is, well, it's not the same, it's related to this. In fact, then clearly this is real in your case, but clearly if this is less than E, we cannot do the mapping. So the mapping is exact if we consider an energy higher than all the epsilon I, then the mapping is exact, and that's what we did first to see that the two things are the same. So the Green function in quantum physics, let's say, in the assumption of forward scattering path, so directed polymers, is very much the same as the, of course, the beta here plays the role of the disorder, because this is then, you know, if this configuration is fixed, then the disorder plays the role of 1 over beta, in fact, of the temperature. But the thing is that what is nice here is that the result that you got is far more general than the assumptions you use to prove it. You use that these are real quantities, and what we see is that the factors that we can take are far, far more general.
Is that supposed to be a product?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry. I try to write it here not to make mistakes. I'm not writing by heart, but even so.
It's the same thing.
Sorry?
The same thing.
And the same here, yes. No, it's the same. It's exactly the same with this mapping. But then, I mean, the final conclusion for me here for this audience is that is your results are far more general than you think. Okay, so.
Maybe just move the mouse around a little.
Oh, I have. Okay. So again, these are the results before. Okay. In fact, the previous figure is just to cheat people. If you really, they are relatively easy to feed. The real test is the skewness. So this is the skewness, and this for two values of the disorder is how they go with L to the minus 2/3, and so you see that really we hit the expected skewness of this is for F2. We hit really the expected skewness in this KPZ theory.
So how well does, what about the mean? Does it fit also so well? The mean?
No, the mean cannot be fitted because.
There's a linear term.
Yeah.
L of
the
side. No, but you
know,
as I say, you don't know the linear time, that's the problem.
No, okay. No, we fit. In fact, that was one of the things that passed last year.
You fit with the asymptotic linear term.
Exactly, no.
No, you don't know.
No, we fit and also agrees very, you know, we have this linear term plus this thing. So we can fit this correction for F2, because F0, the mean is 0, and then didn't appear. So that's what that bothered us. As we didn't know your theory, didn't bother us. Why in one case we get L over 1/3 correction, and in the other case we didn't. And it's just are the properties of F2 and F0. Okay, magnetic field. When we include a magnetic field, this is the same as adding a complex factor to this path. I could write it there. It's a very easy factor, but it really doesn't matter. The idea is that this is even more general than I said before. So the results again are applicable in a very, very wide range of cases, and probably it's a challenge to see how they work. So applying an electric field, then that in my sum here, what I'm doing is that I am multiplying here by complex factors. Even in this case, I still obtain the same two functions. And with one important thing, is that here I am changing the psi, the localization length changes. This system has negative magneto resistance, so when you apply a magnetic field, they conduct better, not less, as one intuitively may think. They conduct better because you suppress interference, so the system conducts better, the localization length changes, but the distribution function is still the same. Okay, then the other things we kept on is to study the half plane. Again, you have results, and that's Pierre suggests us to do, as we have all the machinery, he suggests that that these are well-known results in your community, so we try to see if, again, the quantum systems do like that. Then, this is what we call Anderson model, so full quantum calculations. This is the geometry we use when we want to do forward scattering path. And in this problem, this is very demanding, so most of the calculation has been done with this forward scattering path. So here, we put the weights that are there, but in going, so we just go up and right and up, we just go in this direction, no?
In the results you were showing us, they involved paths that were not necessarily directed.
Yes. In this, in
here you're saying now you do directed.
Exactly. When I say Anderson model, I hear all the paths are involved. When I say NSS model or directed forward scattering path, means that only the results in one direction are used, no?
The size of the weights can be positive or negative, right? In the NSS model, it's important.
In the NSS model, yeah. Exactly. In the difference, the NSS model here is quite subtle, because we can choose that. There are two choices, but we can choose here that the weight here is just omega or minus omega, so that all the paths have the same weight, except for a sign. And then it's the interference of this a sign that is random. So it's the interference of these different signs what give rise to a single predominant path in your the KPZ universality class. So it's really quite more general than just assuming that this is a polymer that goes by the highest energy. No. Here, all the paths have the same weight. Is quite because they have all the same length, and we put exactly the same weight except random signs. Here, at the end, also what we call unbinding transitions is that we can, in this thick line, we can change the strength of the coupling here, so that if this becomes larger than here, then if this is very large, then the system will conduct in one dimension basically. So. Varying the strength here, we can go from half plane to one dimension. Okay, so this is half plane. Again, this is the distribution, this is the F4 for this. So we get F4 for half plane. This is the skewness. The dots are for the Anderson model, so taking into account all loops. And this is for the NSS model. And this is the transition. So if we vary the edges, the strength at the edges, And this is, we are talking here the skewness, and this is system size. So these sizes are already quite large, 10,000 sites. Then you see if the this is very large, we end up with zero skewness, because that's the system become basically one-dimensional, so this is tending to the log normal distribution. If the if we have one, then we have the half plane. This is the skewness for F4. And so you see that when this is one, it's going to F4. The binding transition corresponds to F1. So we found a fourth Tracy Whedon distribution. This in the unbinding transition, so when you have a compromise between conducting in one dimension or in the whole half plane, then you have the distribution F1 here. And this is a very peculiar transition, because usually in the transitions you have the parameter has two values, and at the critical point it's always in between them. But here it's very, very strange. In fact, I was mad with Pierre, because because it's very strange that the parameter, that the critical value of the all the parameter that you are considering is not between the two phases that you are studying. Here is much higher. And in fact, it's even worse. This black thing is the critical point. And you see that here, this data, we cannot run further, but this, they go above the critical point and then come back. Then, okay, this is the raw data. Then I try to overlap it by scaling, as you do in all the transitions. And the overlap that I got is this strange thing. So, okay, here again, this is the log normal. Here is the half plane, so F4. And this is the value of F1. Then this was a funny story. Before talking to Pierre, I plot this thing. Well, this is not a standard. I mean, the thing is, finite size effects here are very big. Then the way I decided to eliminate them is dividing the skewness as a function of size, or by the skewness at the critical as a function of size also, but at the critical coupling. So what I assume is the same finite size effect will be for the critical point as for the rest. So I divide it by that, I plot, and I obtain this. So this is the critical point, and I obtain this strange function. And Pierre couldn't believe me. He said, "No, no, you did something wrong. I'm sure you did something wrong." But then a day later or something, he said, "No, if I can, in fact, I can calculate analytically the scaling function." Then he came, and this dashed line here is the calculation that he provided.
Okay, it's a backrend paper.
Okay, you just copied from somewhere. It impressed me a lot anyway.
There's a factor of two misprints in that paper.
Okay, so
which is important for fitting the data.
So
this is a transition from in a half space with an attractive hole or repulsive, sorry, with attractive hole from GSC to GOE to log normal.
Okay, so the last.
We have the same transition in Stokestic.
Okay, this is just at criticality. The F1 is fitted again. Terribly nice. So that's all. Thank you.
So for the Anderson localization, you have these nice ensembles of unitary
yes.
Orthogonal, and that depends on whether you put magnetic field spin orbit scattering or synthetic, but in the directed polymer language, you have these things appearing as a function of whether you go point to point or line to point, etc. It's funny that they don't talk to each other.
No, they don't talk, exactly. No, because that's what we saw, put in the magnetic field, we changed the universality class from GOE to GUE in the Anderson model, but this is not related to what you call GUE. It's not, yeah.
Did you try the symplectic?
No, we didn't try the symplectic. No, we didn't try. Yes, we didn't suggest it. So.
So for the direct, usually directly follow my, you can look at the joint distribution, and, you know, it's two different endpoints. I mean, is there sort of a quantum mechanical analog in your case?
It's two different.
Well, I mean, if you think of the height, I mean, then, you know, I can look at the height at two different points and ask what is the joint distribution.
Oh, yeah, we could
looking at a single point and you find it.
Yeah, we could do the same, exactly.
But,
yeah.
I mean, there's sort of a quantum mechanical, you know. I mean,
yes, these are correlation functions. Yes.
So these functions are
Yes, exactly. We could do the same, although we haven't done it.
Yeah, we haven't done it.
You'll do two-time correlation.
I was wondering if you looked at the crossover between the GOE and the Bach rings. The F1 and the F0, I guess, because this is something that Casamassa has seen in the liquid crystal experiments. If you study the skewness,
yes,
you can see it go between the two values, so 0.29 and 0.35. And there is a unusual behavior. There's actually a dip, a minimum in the skewness.
Well, I mean, we haven't done it because all we have done is here. Right. But
you can see because you see the Bach rings. We have not.
So what do you suggest to?
Yeah. In the growth models, what you would do is basically you would look at the change in the height. Okay.
Yes.
So you would evolve the system to some time t naught. Mm-hmm. And then go an additional time t. So if t naught is small, like zero, and then you let t be large, so if the ratio of t to t naught, which is a kind of crucial parameter, if that ratio is large, then you basically get GOE. Because it's just like growing from a flat geometry.
Yes, yes.
But if you flip the ratio the other way, so you evolve the system for some long time t naught, and then you look at a small time t after that, you're essentially looking at dynamic correlations in the steady state, in the stationary state.
Yes.
So there you see Bach rings. So depending upon this ratio of t naught to t, if t naught to t is small, then you get GOE. Okay, so you would get a skewness of 0.29. If you go the other way, then you would get Bach rings distribution. So, and that has a skewness of 0.35. But interestingly, if you study the skewness as a function of this parameter, t naught over t, then instead of going kind of monotonically between those two values of GOE and Bach rings, it
has a deep
drops down and then pops
so it's
up.
The,
so I'm wondering,
it seems related.
Numerically, it's something that is very, it's a universal feature of this crossover. I don't know what you would be looking at, in a sense, the temporal correlations, okay, in the log G, I don't know, as a function of L, but, anyway, we can talk more, but it would be interesting.
Yes, certainly.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's thank the speaker again.